Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Joni Cannell, your host for Real Life Lessons. Our topic today is a real philanthropic futurist. And our leading lady today is Trista Harris with Future Good. Good morning, Trista.
Good morning, Joni. Thanks so much for having me on today.
I can't wait to get the show started because I've got a really big surprise for our listeners. And I just want to clue them in just for a second, though, on what you do, Trista, because futurist, philanthropic futurist sounds kind of interesting. So let me just tell our folks here that Trista is an advocate for leaders in the philanthropic and nonprofit sectors. She runs Future Good, which is a community of visionaries committed to building a better future. This is the big surprise. She just authored a book by the same name called Future Good. It's hot off the press, I mean, just literally, and just sold out in the first couple of weeks that it was released. So, Trista, let's start with that. Tell us about your book.
Oh, for sure. So I wrote Future Good. I've worked in the philanthropic and nonprofit sector for the last 15 years or so. And I was getting really frustrated because people that were making the world a better place, I felt like didn't have access to all of the tools to make the future better. And when I was running a foundation, the stock market collapsed and we were a foundation that was giving away money and suddenly we had a lot less dollars to give away. And I started talking to bigger foundations and said, hey, you know, what do we do next? What happens when these sort of things happen? And nobody had an answer. And I thought, this is ridiculous that we don't have a plan for what happens when things don't go exactly the way that we think it is. And we also don't have a vision of what we want the world to look like moving forward. And so that started my own journey to learn as much as I could about the future and what's coming next. And in that process, I realized that people thought the future wasn't accessible to them. So it felt like this sort of scary Hunger Games future that's coming towards us. And so people didn't engage in thinking about what was next because they were worried about what was coming next. And I think what people have forgotten is that the future doesn't happen to us. It's something that we create with the decisions that we make today. And so I wrote Future Good because I wanted the future to be really accessible for people that are making the world a better place. And I wanted it to be easy and not feel so complicated for them to build a future lens for their work.
Wow. So, you know what, it sounds to me like you're saying we have a lot more control than we think we do. And sometimes people just get in this point where they just feel helpless, powerless, but you're saying we can create a future, a good future.
Yep. For sure.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be something that we're sort of scary and scared and pushing away. We can get really excited about what's next and then build towards it.
Okay, so one of the things in your book, which I was fortunate enough to have a peek at before the show, before it sold out, is that, Trista, you talk a lot about mindset in your book. And, you know, you're talking now a little bit about we can make a good future. But what kind of a mindset do people need to have for being futuristic, philanthropic people?
Yeah. I think the most important part is we have to stop loving the problem. So we spend so much time describing how terrible things are. Gaps are this big and the poverty rate is this high. And we get stuck in that place where we use all of our time and energy to describe how terrible things are. I think we have to move to the place where instead we use that energy envisioning what we want it to look like and start to notice bright spots, because there's examples of what the future could look like that already exist in our day-to-day. We just need to lift some of those things up a little bit more and invest in them so that it's more likely to happen.
Do you have an example of that?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, in Minnesota, we have huge racial disparities, and especially in things like education. And I have been to a million meetings where we spend a ton of time and energy saying, hey, did you know there's disparities? Hey, there's these disparities. And at the end of the hour, we've spent the whole time just describing that there is a problem. And instead, mm-hmm. if people have gathered together because they want to do something differently, let's actually create the space so that they can do that. So let's think about what the community would look like if we didn't have these educational disparities. What would it look like if we didn't leave any genius on the table? What kind of community would that be? And then how do we back up and figure out what are the things that we can take to do to actually get there?
So you really are putting forth a vision, sort of a mm-hmm. positive future, and thinking big, too, is what I'm hearing a little bit
yeah,
about that.
For sure.
Not just, yeah, the stepwise thing, but like, hey, what happens if there were no racial disparity here? That's a big vision that I think that, you know, you need to get to even make any progress in the future, right? Think of something that's really big.
Yeah, and I think for many of us, we spend our time in incremental solutions. So if I was running an after-school program and I was doing a traditional visioning process, I would say, you know, success would be 2 years from now, maybe we were serving 10% more kids or our budget was 15% larger. But if I actually envisioned what the world would look like if the problems that we cared about were completely solved, I may come to the place where I would say, you know, I wish we didn't have to do an academic after school program because kids are getting every single thing that they need during the school day. And maybe my solution to get there would be teacher training, or maybe it would be public policy and making sure that our schools were fully funded. It leads you to different solutions when you move towards transformation. And if we kept on doing that incremental work, we'd never actually get to that future that we're envisioning.
Right. Right. Well, one thing that you said here is that what sort of spurred this for you was having this downturn in the economy and this challenges here. And you're talking about having this great vision, but how do you stick with that? I mean, there are these ups and downs in the economy and, you know, social and political support waxes and wanes. How do you stay strong and resilient throughout this process?
Yeah, I think one of the big issues is understanding where you're going. So, there, you know, there's that saying that, you know, if it doesn't matter where you're going, it doesn't matter which direction you go. And for many of us, there isn't a long-term plan for the change that we want to see in the community or even what our individual lives look like in the long term. I think for a lot of us, we haven't created a vision for ourselves of what our future could look like. And I think, you know, there's an example of when pilots are flying an airplane, they know exactly where they're going. You know, you land at the Minneapolis airport or you don't. There's not really a, you know, an in-between. But along the way, you hit turbulence and there's wind and it's constantly pushing you off track. But if you know the direction that you're going, you make those adjustments. And I think a lot of this work is developing that clear destination. And then it doesn't matter how turbulent things are or the sort of societal ups and downs that are for sure going to happen and happen at an even faster and greater rate now than they have in the future, in the past. But if you know where you're going, you can readjust so that you still get to that destination.
Well, let's just share an example from your experience. I mean, you've probably had to readjust several times. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about what that might have looked like at one point?
Yeah, there's an example. Really early in my career, I was a fundraiser for Girl Scouts. And we had gotten this big state grant to do some work in a specific community. And it was a number of organizations that were collaborating together. And it was fantastic. We were developing programming, working together in new ways. We could invest in new staff to do that. And the political environment changed, and our state got a new governor, and he decided to unallocate those grants, which is something that I hadn't heard of previously, but it is when the state has given you a grant, you have spent some of the money, and they say, hey, you have to send all the money back. And so that's not a fun process. And some of the smaller organizations actually shut down because they didn't have the money to send back to the state. And for those that were left standing, we had to come together and say, hey, we made some pretty significant promises to community about after-school programming that we were going to provide during the summertime. We don't have the staffing or the dollars to do that in the way that we envisioned. And so what can we do? And so what we decided was that together we were going to invest in a bus, a circulator bus through the neighborhood. It was a pretty hilly neighborhood and hard for kids to get around. And each of our organizations paid part of that cost. And this circulator bus had different stops through the neighborhood. And what it would do was pick up kids and then take them to a specific program for different days of the week. So each of us had envisioned, you know, Girl Scouts will do programming 5 days a week during the summertime. We couldn't afford to do that anymore because we didn't have the resources. So instead what we said is Girl Scouts will do programming for girls in the neighborhood, but just on Mondays. And so the circulator bus would pick up kids and bring them to our organizations on Mondays, and we would provide those services. And then the next day, they'd go to the library, and on the third day, they'd go to the pool. And so there was a whole series of programming that happened for kids, and that happened because we had to be flexible and collaborate in a brand new way because the resources weren't there. And I think the end result ended up being something really positive for community.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I mean, even just getting on a bus and going around, what a way to build a community there.
For sure.
I know. Yeah, it sounds like it involves a lot of creativity to get through some of this. And, you know, coming up with some alternatives isn't always just a linear process, that you really need to take into consideration all the different facets and really what is the barrier and how can you get around it in a way that maybe doesn't involve money, right?
Right, right. And money is for sure helpful. It's everybody's favorite thing when it comes to running businesses or nonprofit programs. But there's times where you just don't have it, and it doesn't mean that the community need doesn't exist. You just have to figure out different ways to utilize those resources.
Yeah, I think that's just so important. And, you know, sometimes people just, like, throw in the towel, shut it down. Well, funds are gone. You know, we're just going to give up. And then you're saying, no, you don't have to. With that long-term plan, you can still make it happen. Well, you know, one of the questions I have sort of talking about this, these scarce resources, is that, you sometimes in this nonprofit industry, you have a lot of organizations who are working together for a common good, and you're saying, well, instead of competing for these scarce resources, we're going to work together and make this happen. And how do you do that? How do you help people have an open mind and be flexible so they can work together across organizations for the common good?
Yeah, I think the bigger piece is that you have to realize that you're better together. So really early in my career, I was fundraising for a healthcare nonprofit, and we were providing health insurance for people that were uninsured. And I had a meeting with a nun who was part of an organization that was doing similar services. And she sat me down and she said, "You guys are encroaching on our turf and you need to knock it off." And I was like, wait a second, there are for sure enough uninsured people to go around. It isn't like we have it fully covered and you have it fully covered. We've sort of gotten into this scarcity mindset where it feels like only one organization can do something and only one can be in a space. And the problems that nonprofits are working on are the most complicated problems in society. It's problems that both government and business haven't been able to solve with a lot more time and a lot more money. So I think for nonprofit organizations, we have to understand how to collaborate differently. I think collective impact is a really strong way to do that, where many nonprofit organizations come together around a common problem or common thing that they're trying to solve. And they say, okay, if we're trying to increase third grade reading scores, this program can do teacher training. This one can do an after-school program for kids. This one can make sure that parents are employed and able to stay in long-term supportive housing. This one can make sure that kids are able to get to school safely. There's lots of different angles that you have to come at to solve really complicated problems. I think the other part that we've gotten into this idea that resources are really scarce, and I think the bigger sort of societal issue is that we haven't decided that it's important enough to solve these problems. And so when we start to get to the place as a society where we have a vision of what success looks like, there's a saying, if we can get a man to the moon, how come we can't solve poverty? Well, the moon was really clear. You're either there or you're not there. Poverty is super unclear because we don't have an understanding of what it means to actually solve that problem. Do we mean we want to make sure everybody has an income of more than $15,000 a year? Do we mean just people that are working? Do we mean just people with kids? What's that target that we're working towards? And as a society, what does that common ground look like? What's the sort of floor and bottom that we want to put on society, and why is that important? And so I think there's a lot of people work that has to happen too for us to decide what do we want the common good to look like? What's important to us as a society? What are the things that we have to build? And how are nonprofits an important part of that strategy? And then how are businesses an important part of that strategy? They don't get to get let off the hook just like government shouldn't be let off the hook. We each have a responsibility. So for businesses, how are they spending their dollars with people of color owned vendors? How are they keeping dollars in local community? What is their responsibility for the unemployment rate? How are they making sure that kids are educated so they're able to work in those companies in the long term? We all have an important piece of this puzzle, but we need to understand that we're all on the same team to do that.
Yeah, I really like the way you're saying we each have a responsibility. It's not just someone else's problem. I mean, we are part of it, every single one of us. You know, I was also thinking as you were talking that, you know, there's sort of, I do a lot of work in the for-profit industry as well, you know, and we're talking nonprofits here. And, you know, I think so often with marketing people, the first thing they do is like, okay, how are we going to eliminate the competition or crush the competition, you know, squelch them
right.
So we can shoot ahead in our in our niche. And you're saying, you know, when you're talking about future good, you know, and making the world a better place, you're leveraging the competition and turning them into collaborators, to help all of us get to where we want to be.
Well, and how
that's
the
a really different mindset.
Yeah, how's the competition, even on the business side, making you better at the work that you do and pushing you to develop a better product? If you're the only one in the market that's creating something, you're going to get a little lazy about it, and you're not going to be providing the best solutions for consumers. The model that's been really interesting to me is Elon Musk with Tesla and envisioning not just what it takes for that to be a successful company, but can that be the agitator that makes other car companies work on electric models? So how do we move to the place where we're building innovation that changes everybody?
Yes, and even just with these ideas, getting everyone to start thinking about this. Absolutely. Well, let me ask, just in case our listeners want to reach you after our show, how would you like them to contact you?
Yeah, for sure. So you can check out my website, which is tristaharris.org. That's T-R-I-S-T-A. And there I have information about the Future Good book. There is another printing of it that's coming out now. So if you pre-order for that second printing on my website, I'll send you the electronic version of the book right away so you can start to think about what that means for your work. And then if you have questions about this conversation, you can reach me on Twitter at Trista Harris so we can have an ongoing conversation afterwards about what's coming next for the world.
Okay, so if our listeners, if you didn't catch Trista's contact details, don't despair. We'll have her information listed in our show notes. You can find it all there. All right, I want to ask you, Trista, a couple of questions about you. Because, I mean, sometimes this can feel overwhelming to people, like, whoa, you know, how do I go out and do all this good and make the world a better place, you know? And like I said, we're talking about the beginning, you just feel like, oh, throw your arms up in the air, it's just too hard. But, you know, as a role model, tell us, how did you feel empowered to start Future Good and maybe even just write your book? I mean, what came over you to be able to feel like you could do these things?
You know, I think each of us has a really unique dent that we're supposed to make in the world. And often there's this, you know, quiet voice that we can hear when we get out of our email for 5 minutes and, you know, sit quietly. And it's telling us what's on track and what's off track for us. And it is really easy to drown out that voice. And one of the things that I've found for myself, especially over the last couple of years, I've been running a number of organizations, and a couple months ago I just started my Future Good consultancy, which helps organizations understand what's coming next. But I've been hosting these women's retreats, and I started doing it because for myself, I could feel that burnout that I think for many women leaders is just right on the edge of where we're sitting right now. You can just sort of feel it chasing you down and sort of hot on your back. And I realized that I had to start doing something different. Otherwise, I wasn't going to be able to do that work in the long term. And so I was hosting a women's retreat that was in Hilton Head, and I was sort of pushing the participants there to think about their unique dent. What is the intersection where you really can do the most good and you sort of come to life and that purpose is so clear for you? And as I was pushing them, one of the participants said to me, what about you? You seem to come to life as you're hosting these retreats and as you're doing this future work, but your day-to-day work then was running an association of 180 foundations that give away $1.5 billion a year and helping them be more effective. And she said, what about you and that dent? Is your dent supposed to be working with these foundations, or is it about helping the broader world understand what's coming next and understand what their purpose is? And, you know, my initial pushback was sort of, this is not about my transformation, this is about your transformation. But as you know, those seeds get planted, that quiet voice suddenly becomes a roar, and you hear it all the time, and you go, okay, gosh, I really got to do these things. And so once I became really aligned with my purpose and made time to listen to myself and to listen to my heart, the path forward becomes really clear. And it isn't about hustling, and it's not about what are the million things that I can do. It's how do I align my work with my purpose, and how do all of those things build on each other?
How do I align my work with my purpose? I think that's just, I'm repeating that just so the listeners will catch it all and absorb it, because you said a lot there, and that's just so important. I love also the way you talk about your quiet voice becomes a roar, and I think sometimes people are trying to quiet the quiet voice. You know, squelch it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no, I just need to get on with my day and deal with all these things, and sometimes ignore it just by keeping busy, but it keeps coming back to you.
Joni, I think, you know, you talk a lot about that flex piece. And so how, you know, women are constantly flexing. We are magic. It's, you know, you're sort of bending and contorting to really make things work. And I think it's an amazing skill set that many of us have. But I think the piece that we need to get to is, are we flexing to meet our goals, or are we flexing to meet what the world thinks we should do? And for me, I have to really pay attention to that feeling of flex, of like, does this feel like I'm bending myself and stretching myself in a way so that I can have more impact? Or is this a time where I'm bending and sort of pinching and not living in my true purpose to meet what I think somebody else wants from me? And that's an important distinction that I think many of us don't give ourselves enough time to really understand or to feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in terms of my real life model, that might come a little bit under the authenticity piece too, because, you're talking about a way to be true to yourself and find your true purpose and allow yourself. So it's so funny you say allow yourself to fulfill your purpose. And there's so many people, I mean, especially women, who are saying, no, I can't do that because for whatever reason, I've got these obligations, I've got to make money, I've got to blah, blah, blah. But you're giving people an opportunity to do both, to align your work with your purpose.
Yeah. I think when people start thinking about the legacy that they want to leave and the impact that they want to have, it helps to clarify what's important and what things are just noise. And I know for me and for a lot of the women that I work with in the mastermind groups, there is a ton of noise. And that noise and busyness is what stops us from really living our full purpose, because it feels like, oh, gosh, you know, my email is constantly buzzing and I have volunteered for 100 different things and I have to be the best at everything. And, you know, as a parent of two kids that are getting bigger and bigger every day, there's always that sort of competition piece of how to be the best parent and how to be the most amazing person running an organization, how to be the best leader and the best friend. And you can do all of those things, but you for sure cannot do it in the same day. And one of my good friends talks a lot about don't compare your insides to somebody else's outsides. And I think the the hardest time in my life when I wasn't being authentic is I was comparing what I was trying to do with what somebody else's purpose was. So I felt like, you know, if I wasn't on, you know, social media and very visible about the stuff that I was doing, then I wasn't being successful. Or if I wasn't the parent that brought the fancy snacks to the soccer game, I wasn't living up to my purpose. And once I got really clear about where I was supposed to be and what I was supposed to be doing, it all just aligned in a better way.
Does your book give people insights on how to figure this out? I mean, you know, because this is something that's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the important piece is the book talks a lot about some of the practices that you can build for yourself to pay attention to what's coming next. And the future is not all about community issues and external things. Sometimes it's the future of you. What's the impact that you're going to have? What's the legacy that you want to leave behind? What do you want your own obituary to look like? And there's activities in there that help you create the time and space and networks of support to be able to do that. So how do you build your community of women that can help you move forward on this path? And I think for many of us, it's access to those consistent practices and access to people that are helping you transform into your purpose that really make the difference. I have this theory that our friends and family love us exactly the way that we are. And so when we try to transform, they try to stop it because they're like, you're great. You don't have to be different. And you have to start to find connections with other women that are also in transformation so that you can sort of build a mastermind group where you're supporting each other's development and providing the, you know, kick in the butt and the hand-holding and support that's necessary to transform. And you know, for many of us, we haven't built those places. We've got our family groups and our friendship groups, but we haven't created those mastermind groups that can really help us move our lives to the next level.
Yeah, so Tristan, one of the things I'm hearing is that, you know, especially we're talking about for women here too, and it's obviously true for men as well.
For sure.
I hear it so often for women, like, oh, no, I don't have time for me. You know, I have to take care of my kids. I have to work, whatever it is. I have to take care of the house, take care of my husband or wife, whatever. And and you're saying, no, you need to carve out some of that time to take care of yourself to be able to take care of all these other pieces and maybe even bigger parts of the future of the world, you know? So not a selfish motive. It can be something that's part of a bigger picture here.
For sure. Just like they say on airplanes, you have to put on your mask first. And I think for many of us, we've been taught to make do and to take care of everybody else. And there's nothing left for you and you can't help people if you're completely burnt out. And so I think you really have to start with that space for yourself and that space to clarify what that voice is inside and the network of support that can help you get there. Otherwise, you can't do all those other things that you're responsible for, at least not in the long term.
Yeah, Trista, this is really big. I mean, I can't tell you how many women I personally know that could use this message and as well as just in general what you see out there, you know, in social media and the press and all that it's something that's so important to do. And in that, you're also talking about in the burnout factor, if we have half the population, you know, or some portion of the women that are burning out because they're not taking the time out to do this, we're losing all the resources and the energy that could be helping the world be a better place. So if it's just one person at a time, one family at a time, you know, you need to keep everyone strong. So this message is so important, you know, and I really hope that our listeners can go and order a copy of Future Good because it's just on so many levels something that could be really positive for us. Well, our show was already coming to an end. I was like, I want to go another half hour here, but just thank you so much for being our leading lady today.
Thanks so much for having me, Joni. It was great talking with you, and I'm so excited about the audience that you've built of having these conversations. It's exactly what the future needs.
Fantastic, Trista. So thanks to you, and thanks to all our listeners. We'll be back again for another Women Lead Radio Show. We're here every Monday at 9 a.m. and Friday at 2 p.m. I'm Joni Cannell, host of Real Life Lessons. Thank you for listening, and remember, real women are resilient, empowered, authentic, and limber.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.